Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks for joining us. Once again, we're joined by Nick Manfredi. Nick is a real estate investor, speaker, and corporate business owner. He's been featured in Fortune Magazine, the LA Times, and contributes articles to news media, including CNN Magazine, Money Magazine, rather, the Press Enterprise, and RIS Media. Nick, thanks for being here
again. Thank you very much.
We've heard, at least I've heard, when during the process of a short sale, there is a request of a hardship letter. Describe what a hardship letter is.
A hardship letter is a document that will describe to the loss mitigator who works for the lender in a department that evaluates, hey, should we take something short of what we're owed, which is what a short sale is? Should we accept something short? And says, is this a for real hardship? In other words, did they have a spouse that passed away that was an income earning spouse? Have they gone through a divorce? It's no longer, you know, the family's no longer intact. Do they have a medical illness that's permanent? And really, what's most important about that hardship is it a permanent hardship? Well, an example of a hardship that isn't permanent would be like someone who had lost their job. Maybe they lost their job earning, and we've all had this experience. Many of us have had it, that is. We lost our job. Maybe we were earning $50,000, but we got a new one, you know, 2 months later earning $65,000. That wouldn't be an example of a permanent hardship, and therefore the lender would be less likely to accept the short sale if, and maybe actually work out a forbearance agreement in that case, like a repayment plan on behalf of the owner versus doing a short sale.
Have you noticed lenders being real flexible working with the people that are in or behind, that they're willing to do a lot of things that will prevent the foreclosure?
I think that there have, if you read through the lines of what who you're talking to, that is the loss mitigator, you're hearing that there's initiatives from higher ups because they're sensing some of the pressure. However, there is a real need by the lender to either, I hate to put it this way, but, you know, poop or get off the pot. In other words, is, by golly, sorry about that.
I think that's a four-letter word, yeah, but it's okay on here.
But the real question is there a real opportunity for a forbearance agreement? The person has to prove that they have the income to make the payments. If they can't prove that, then whether or not, even if the initiative is, hey, let's make workouts, the reality is the person doesn't have a way to make these payments.
Right.
And so they really look at that closely. They'll talk about it, but most of the people we talk to, there's no way a forbearance agreement's going to work out in the first place. They can't make payments.
Right. The hardship request or the hardship statement, can that fall under the category of the payment is adjusted and I can't make the adjusted payment?
Absolutely. If payment resets are one of the, you know, we've got $1 trillion coming due or resetting over the next 12 months, that is probably one of the ones we hear most.
Okay.
And that is and on par with an individual who lost a spouse that was income earning. As far as the bank is concerned, it's permanent. It's not going to change. You're a 4.5% teaser went to 7.5, and you're not going to earn it enough ever to make this, or at least over the next 6 months, to make these payments.
I find that interesting because they knew it was coming, but still it's a hardship.
Well, I think what they – yes, that's right. They knew it was coming, but what they didn't know was coming was that California property was going to go flat and then start to slide. The reality is that that BC market, that paradigm of – You have a potential customer for life. They continue to refi and continue to refi and continue to refi until there's no appreciation. So and there's no more money to pull out, and then they got to make the payments, because a good percentage of the people we're talking to were making their payments by refiing and having some liquid cash to make payments for the next 12 months.
Your business model probably demands that you mail to people that are in foreclosure?
Absolutely.
What percentage of people that are in foreclosure that really would benefit from the service actually give you a call and say, hey,
it's minuscule. It's probably 1% of the people, and we send a very respectful letter out, and we wish there were more people really that we could help out.
And
we charge them nothing.
Exactly. And maybe it's not even believable. Is that part of the problem?
I think that, yeah, there's definite, you know, there have been a lot of investors over the years that may have contributed to the perception that's out there, that investors are only out there to steal your dough. And to some degree, that you need to protect yourself. There are people that are out there that way, but it makes it a little bit more difficult for those of us who are in the market and plan on being here in 20 years and not having people, you know, throw meat cake at us later on down the road. We want to survive and do a good job. It is a difficult hurdle to get over sometimes. And not just with the homeowners. It's hard with realtors.
Sure.
It's hard with the brokers in the real estate industry. So it's not limited just to owners.
That's one of the things that is frustrating as an investor. And in this cycle that we're coming into, the investor is going to play a very important role if we're going to get to the other side of this, because all of this inventory is not going to be absorbed by the owner-occupant.
Well, you know, as investors, most of us who have been around for a while and enjoyed hearing the neighborhood say, thank you, thank you, thank you. We took the ugliest house on the block. Mm-hmm. There was one house in particular. We called it the Predator house because in the movie Predator, there's, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger with this big gun and everybody's all, and they cut down the whole forest. That's what needed to happen to this house. I had neighbors coming over saying, thank you so much. I can see the neighborhood now. And so that's kind of a neat feeling with the neighborhood, kind of appreciating the beautification that you do to the property. And now more than ever, that needs to happen in order to sell.
Yeah. Let's talk about the typical person that responds to your company. I just want to get an understanding of, let's say, a prototype. Are they one or two worker families?
I would say it's probably 50-50. Some of them have acquired the property independently. They're the only one on the loan. Probably 50% are married. It's an interesting... I don't know if it's just the time that we're in, the time period we're in with, is that a majority are women.
Really?
A majority are women.
Okay. Single?
No, they're married and they're coming to us because I have a direct conversation with them where I'm very open and say, this is, and a short sale is when we've exhausted all the other options. And frequently I think that, I don't know if it's women with the strength that they generally have because of childbirthing. If you ask my wife, she'd say that was it. But they have more stamina to go through this than the men.
Okay.
And it takes a specific type of man to sit there and say, I need a little bit of help. It's better to work on my own behalf. Frequently, they're tired. They're tired.
Okay. Are there any types of, I don't know, any indication of where the problems are as far as I work in this industry and there's that's industry-wide, there's a problem.
Real estate.
Real estate agents?
Real estate. Loan agents are, it's unfortunate, but they're out there. They were providing the loans before it created this huge swell of employment. Well, they're the first on the chopping block right now, and they are working their tails off to survive. They frequently got into good loans, and now they're unable to make the payments. They can't provide new loans to potential applicants. Now the market has slowed tremendously. I get quite a few from, I've gotten, believe it or not, we have a client with the vice president of Bank of America. Believe it or not,
is one of go on nameless.
Yes, so we'll go nameless. And we've got an underwriter, but I mean the majority of individuals are in the real estate industry.
Okay, I was just curious. Did they have a past history of ownership that would extend beyond the, you know, like maybe into the other bad time that we had in the 90s, or were these newly new owners to where they
50-50.
Just
50-50.
Okay.
50-50. 50% are newer people who, you know, were living in the property and they saw the money that they were making. And you know, in the case of the underwriter, she had done short sales.
Okay.
She was coming directly to us. She had, so it's interesting to kind of watch it all fall apart, but it goes across all the spectrum of experienced and unexperienced.
What about adjustable loans or fixed loans?
Probably 75% adjustables, 25% fixed.
Okay. Low down payments?
Low no down payments. Often they haven't put a dollar into it.
Okay.
Not always, but often.
Prepayment penalties?
Yeah, prepayment. We don't often go into that because if we're talking with the lender about a short sale,
that's gone, man.
Right. They're not getting any prepayment penalty.
Okay. Is the problem due to a payment adjustment more often than the lack of income?
I would say that it's probably a combination of there are circumstances in their life that have changed, and maybe they had it seems to snowball on them. It seems like maybe they had the adjustment, but I don't know if the old adage that circumstances occur in threes, but they'll communicate and the story of what's happened over the last 6 months. And there's some devastating things that happened in their life, whether or not that's, they mounted on and it feels bigger because, these personal circumstances feel bigger, or whether it was just financial and they were just adding on. I really can't tell, but they seem like real problems that they're dealing with beyond the finances.
Is one of the biggest problems just starting now and going into the future where we have prices reduce? Is that going to create really the biggest of the problems?
It's going to absolutely, yes. If not just because of the perception that I'm paying $4,000 a month for a Southern California house that's decreasing in value every single month, I'm upside down and I can rent it for $1,800. If anything, if you introduce that concept to a couple, they're going to fight about it that month. And it ends up having an impact on the families. It ends up having real problems. The finances end up having real problems within the family and causing problems in and of themselves. So it's hard to really put a finger on it. I hear a lot, but without a doubt, the resetting of payments, the decreasing of the value of property impacts people really. It's devastating for them. So, yeah, it has an impact on their willingness to pay.
Right.
And they compare.
Sure.
They compare.
And the other thing is, I'm sure a lot of people decided to become homeowners and added a couple of hours, maybe a day, to their drive.
That's right.
And at that point, when you're not getting a financial gain for you just added 10 hours to your week, that becomes very unattractive.
It doesn't even have to be that. They can work locally. A lot of people I'm talking to, Inland Empire's been growing, and they are employed locally. Most of the people I'm talking to are employed locally. But they look at, by golly, I can rent this house for, across the street for $1,700. In one case, one of the women that we're working with, her husband and her pay $4,000 a month for the house that they're living in. They're moving next door into a rental property for $1,750 a month. We're definitely getting into that time period at which the value of a house is what it supplies you, a roof over your head. It's not the value of appreciation and the dollar that's being supplied to you. What does the house give you? It only gives you a roof over your head, a place to sleep at night, and that's an interesting change. Been a long time.
Yes, it has.
A long time.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have had great second jobs by just refiing their home. Has the refiing of these loans been a dominant problem, or are we really stuck with the origination, the original loan and a late purchase, say a 05 and 06 purchase, and they just paid too much for the property?
I'd hate to say it again because it sounds like I'm saying the same thing. It's probably 50-50.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Yeah, probably 50% of the people have, they've been borrowing out of the property to actually pay the bills. And, sure, some of them might have bought a boat or two or some toys, but when you look at their responses, they don't feel at all that they got anything out. They got much out of all this money that you'd see pile $100,000 on the table. But the $100,000 in Southern California goes really fast when you're paying $3,500 a month. And then you've got to pay utility bills. You got to pay all the other stuff. That was paying their bills.
And the economists that I've been interviewing, I asked them about the refinancing of the properties and pulling out equity, and did they consider that a problem? And to a person, it wasn't a big deal. It was just insignificant to them. And I think just the opposite. There's a great quote by an economist that says it may be prudent to burn your furniture to heat your home, but we shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking we've discovered a new heating system. And in essence, that's what they've done with their lifestyle and even our economy. We've been funding our economy with borrowed money, and it's kind of about done.
And I have been, you know, as we've been having this conversation, you know, yes, on one end, I feel for these individuals, but on the other end, I have no pity for them. When they come to my office, I say, heck, you know, I spoke to a woman last week on Wednesday, and I said, I mean, you made 1,000% on your money every single month. She put $2,000 down every single month for 2 years. Or 3 years. And I said, you did pretty dang good. And she got a big smile on her face and, you know, and said, but she like she was proud of herself. And I said, well, to some degree, you know, you don't want to sit there and encourage that pride on that side. But dang, she did do pretty good on her money. So whenever they come into the office, there's one end. Yeah, there's a personal problem there. There's a financial need. Someone who's faking it might sit there and say, oh, I'm so sorry. What a horrible position. But the reality is, I look at them and said, they got a lot of money on their plate and they lived pretty darn well. And they're going to go from a $3,500 a month payment guaranteed to $1,750, and most of them are going to be better off.
Yes, and a lot less stress. And that's not including the maintenance it takes on a home, which is significant.
When it's over, you can see in their face what they're hoping for, and with a short sale is to be able to go, ha, it's all over, and they put it behind them because they've been feeling this pressure, chances are, for the last 4 years.
Sure.
Every single month it bugged them. They had their grandparents talking about, you know, in the background, even though they're a little older, they had that psyche telling them, you're spending too much, you're spending too much. So it's almost like, well, I spent it all, but I'm going to get back to zero and I'll work my way up.
Yeah. So. Okay. Are lenders being realistic about what they're going to end up getting?
I think that, no, I think that they have, like, countrywide, they do lending throughout the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
California is one state. Southern California is one geography. I think that maybe the higher-ups have an idea, an inkling of what they're going to get, and they see these numbers, but it hasn't trickled down to the commoners, the loss mitigators. It hasn't quite happened yet. After all, you know, the National Association of Realtors recently spent $40 million telling everybody it's a great time to buy or sell a home.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of misinformation that's out there that those people read, too.
Do you view the short sale business as being something that's going to last for just, you know, to the end of the year? Or do you view this as something that's going to last for, you know, between 3 and 5 years out?
I would say it's going to last longer than 5 years. If you look at the and I know you have, but looked at the cycles, it would have bucked every cycle that we had in the past. That is the number of trustee sales increasing and then decreasing. That cycle's pretty 7-year-ish. So I think although we're 2 years into it, as far as the lenders are concerned, we're only maybe 1 year into it. So we have at least 5 years worth of opportunity within the short sale arena. At least 5 years where lenders are going to be interested in moving product that they've taken back.
What's occurred this time is it has happened much quicker. I think there's no doubt that the percentage of NODs, for instance, and foreclosures by the end of the year will have accomplished nearly what it took 5 years to last downturn.
Mm-hmm.
We will have solved that in 2 years, with years to come.
I figure that's because all those and I tried to make sense of it back last year in 2006. Why aren't we falling? What is going on? And it was the stated income loans and then with no verification, no doc, that artificially buoyed the Southern California market. So because it was artificially buoyed, it was like the market holding its breath. Well, it's taking it needs to take a big inhale of these properties coming back. And so it's been holding its breath. So it's taken a it's like since it's been holding its breath so long, it needs a lot of intake. And boy, we're experiencing it right now. Harsh.
What's interesting is the attitude of the lender is really going to set them up for bigger and bigger losses per property because they're not getting realistic quickly. There was a listing that we followed in Menifee. This is a gated house, 2,600 mm-hmm. square feet. It appraised for $459 at the time. They listed it at $459. Went to $439, $419, $399, $369, and now $339. No interest. And this is a gated house that's 5 years old, and they fixed it. So all the neighbors probably love them a lot, you know, because now they're $150,000 less than what they owe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's starting to occur. And perhaps they maybe they have so many loans in the neighborhood. This could be a lender that's connected to a builder. That's why the builders try to buoy the prices up by incentives and all that so they don't whack the lender out of, you know.
I don't think they're that smart. As bad as that sounds, I don't think they're that. I think that they're just sitting there saying, this ain't going to happen. This ain't going to happen yet. It ain't going to happen.
It ain't going to happen.
It's denial and hope. It's very powerful. It's been that way with owners for quite some time. I think it resides within the lenders. I think that if they had to look at the enormity of what's on its way, they'd prefer to remain in denial as long as possible before the inevitable comes.
As a business owner, and you own a business, that would seem to be a really bad philosophy and almost guaranteed to have the worst possible outcome. It'd be nice to be able to pre-play it in advance and say, okay, guys, we have to survive and we're going to go there first or in advance. Builders are the same way. They just came out with the building numbers today, and they were all happy that the starts were up. Well, okay, what sense does that make? Because they're not even selling what they have. So, yeah, let's build some more. But it does come back to the corporate image and the whole stock support and that type of thing.
That's right. And like the Countrywide CEO, as he's up there saying, you know, he's kind of given some conflicting reports as to what his expectations are. I mean, it's kind of conflicting is the wrong way to actually put it. It's very conflicting what he said. But if you look at his actions, he's selling all the stock.
Right.
So when it comes to his money, actually, he's actually doing pretty good. He's sold at the right time and the whole bit. He's selling that stock. Way to go there, bucko. But when it comes to the company, after all, he's just, you know, he's the CEO of Countrywide. That's pretty bad. I got to watch what I say, huh? So, ooh, that's bad.
Okay, getting back to the short sale, there's one interesting scenario where you have a short sale, and now you're supposed to basically paint as within a parameter of being honest, a negative scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most of these people, I would say, that got stated income loans probably exaggerated on the upside.
Just a little.
Okay, so now you're presenting the truth,
yes,
to a lender you just maybe lied to.
Right.
Now, is that an issue where now you're presenting something that, in fact, you're documenting, I don't make this much, and you just told them that you did to get the loan? Is that coming up to be a problem?
I think that it is absolutely a problem that exists. The question would be, what would be the benefit of the lender in going after that individual legally? And I think that is a very small group of individuals that it would be worth their while to go after. Unfortunately, they made their bed. Countrywide created no doc loans. They've got to sleep in it.
Okay.
So yes, it is a big problem. What's going to be done about it? I think next to donut.
So crime pays pretty well.
I think it depends on who the criminal was. Was it the owner or was it the lender?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, if it goes wrong for an individual, it's terrible because the rules are pretty harsh. There was a seminar recently, mm-hmm. and we had the guy from the fire department say that on his detail, there was somebody there spending 10 years in jail for breaking one of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they do come after people, but not often enough to where maybe it's sort of like speeding. You're going to go, they'll catch me once in a while.
Absolutely.
Well, Nick, thank you very much for joining us. We really had a lot of fun, and we've learned a lot about short sales. Go ahead and give us your information.
TheShortSaleProcessor.com. We'd love to help people.
Okay. Thanks,
right,
Nick.
You got it.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.